This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
The Celtics get a big win in Milwaukee after acquiring Evan Fournier and saying goodbye to Daniel Tice at the trade deadline. The Bruins had their season paused due to COVID and are looking to get things going. Red Sox begin their season this week, and the Patriots welcome in a whole host of new players. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. We'll start with the Boston Celtics, and the Celtics season to date, of course, has been remarkably disappointing. You could argue that they have been the most disappointing team in the NBA. And Danny Ainge thought that he had to do something at the trade deadline. He thought that his team and his coaching staff was discouraged, and he needed to make a move. And that is exactly what he did. And granted, the move is one that helps them and really is kind of a trade for Gordon Hayward, if you will, with Evan Fournier coming in, trying to match that production. And he has done that through the course of this season. This is his best season in terms of scoring the basketball. So he comes in, but Daniel Tice goes. And Tice was an anchor of this defense, and a defense that has been one that has not hit the mark, at the, to say the least, this year. So the Celtics may not be done. The buyout market is where they look next, and they may look to bring in another big. They're rumored to be in on Andre Drummond. You wonder if LaMarcus Aldridge may be an option as well. But for now, the Celtics played inspired basketball last night against the Bucks. Bucks had won 8 straight games, and the Celtics went in and they played, in my view, their best game of the year. It may also have been Jason Tatum's best game of the year. Tatum shot the ball incredibly well, 13 of 18 from the field. He had 34 points, but also 7 assists and 6 rebounds. This was a big game for the Celtics. It had Robert Williams in the starting lineup for the first time, and he filled the stat sheets with 7 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, as well as 5 blocks in the game. Marcus Smart, 20 for Boston. And they also played really solid defense. They held Giannis Antetokounmpo to just 16 points and were able to, for the most part, shut down a potent Milwaukee Bucks team. So a big win for the Celtics. They hope that that gets things going for them. They're still under 500 at 22-23 on the season. I talked with Jason Tatum postgame after his 34-point game in which the Celtics beat the Bucks.
Hey, Jason, just your thoughts on tonight from a team and also personal perspective and the quality of the win and also how efficient you were shooting the basketball. Do you feel like this was, from a playmaking perspective and team perspective, perhaps the best game of the year?
I don't know about the best game. Clearly, so good to get a win. A lot of guys played well. Especially after what happened yesterday, just losing a couple of our teammates. So it just happened to come together today. And hopefully we can continue to build. I mean, there's only one win, but hopefully this can start something good.
Here is Brad Stevens.
Hey, Brad, just your thoughts on the win tonight. It seemed like you guys were super connected on both ends of the floor, and your thoughts overall.
I mean, it helps when we shot as well as we did. I thought the other, obviously, they shot great too, especially from 3. But yeah, we played with good purpose, good connectivity. I thought everybody that played gave us a good lift, and so that was a positive. We needed to play better. We felt like there was a lot we could build off of in the last 2 quarters of the last game, but. You know, as I said beforehand, defensive intensity and the reliability of all 5 guys on every possession was number one.
Also spoke with Rob Williams, who was inserted into the starting lineup, and he'll play big minutes moving forward. 27 minutes in this game for Williams.
Hey, Rob, just your thoughts, you know, on the start tonight and how you meshed with, you know, the starting unit, the opportunity as it presented itself, and how you felt you impacted the game.
I feel like I did what I'm proud to do. I feel like I generated a lot of energy for me and my teammates. It's my job to do this part.
Mo Wagner was one of the individuals that came to Boston along with Luke Kornet and the trade deadline acquisitions that sent Daniel Theis away. Also, Javonte Green and Jeff Teague. Evan Fournier is not with the team as of yet. We talked with Mo Wagner about joining the Celtics.
Hey, Mo, what was tonight like from an emotional standpoint where you're part of the trade, your Brad said pregame, it was unlikely you're going to play unless it was a blowout scenario. You enter in big minutes. You're trying to make an impact, an impression. What is that like from a mental standpoint to try to do that?
Honestly, the basketball part, we were just talking, it's kind of the easiest thing because it distracts you of all the other stuff that you have going on, like moving and all the off the court stuff that you got to figure out. So just talking about coverages and getting to know new teammates, kind of the fun stuff, you know, and that's kind of what I enjoy most. So it's a good thing about the NBA that you play a lot of basketball, and I kind of try to get lost in that and worry about the other stuff off the court, but basketball is kind of the easiest and most fun part of it.
Now to the Bruins, who had their season paused from Friday to Wednesday as a result of a couple COVID-19 positive cases. Sean Corrali and also Jake DeBrusk remain in COVID protocol. More on that in just a little bit. Bruins returned to the ice for practice on Wednesday and then for a game on Thursday against the New York Islanders. And Bruins got off to a great start. Fans were in attendance for the first time as there was over 2,000 individuals in attendance at that game to cheer on the Boston Bruins. They got out to a 2-0 lead, but then the Islanders came back. They were sloppy with the puck in front of their own net and allowed for a Islanders comeback, which allowed for the Islanders to score three unanswered goals. The Bruins did answer it, though, late, less than a minute after the Islanders went up in the third period, 3-2. They tied it. Anders Bjork put it in the back of the net. Good effort from Charlie Coyle on that. But then right into overtime, it was a win for the Islanders as the Bruins went with Coyle and Bjork to begin the extra session. I talked with the Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy post-game.
Hey, Bruce, just your thoughts on this one, what you saw from the team.
Well, that's pretty general. Had a 2-0 lead. Got some secondary scoring, second unit power play, Cooley. Didn't defend well enough in front of our net. Had to switch goalies. Sure, it wasn't easy on Yarrow to go in like a situation like that. And like I said, they finished around the front of the net. We could have been harder, could have used an extra stop. Got a point out of it. We're in a position to get two. Again, they played winning hockey in the third period better than we did.
Any update on Tuukka?
Upper body, no idea after that. He left. I haven't seen him since and obviously just got down here. So probably have a much better update tomorrow for you.
The update on Tuukka is he's out at least through this weekend. Appears to be a back injury. The official diagnosis, upper body there from Bruce Cassidy, but it appeared in the game, the last game that he played, that there was issues with the back and Tuukka Rask. Let's hear now from Anders Bjork, who tied the game at 3 on his tally late in the third.
Hey, Anders, just your overall take on playing with Charlie tonight and how you guys felt together and obviously coming together on that goal to tie the game late third.
Yeah, Charlie was great. He was all over the ice tonight, making fantastic plays with the puck, slowing the game down, finding guys. So he was fun to play with tonight. I think, our line was bringing a lot of energy. Tough for Cooley. I think he blocked a shot or something. But he was great. He had that great goal and everything. So, I think there were some positives for our line. Charlie definitely drove the ship there, and we could take those positives, but not the end result we wanted, so we're not satisfied on that.
Anders Bjork right there. Let's get to the Patriots. We're going to hear from Jalen Mills, new defensive back, Hunter Henry, new tight end, and also Kyle Van Noy, who's back at linebacker in just a little bit. We'll stick with the wide receivers here to begin the show, and Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Aguilar bring speed. They bring a dynamic aspect to this offense that the Patriots have not had for the last couple of years. So a lot of excitement there. Let's start with Nelson Aguilar, who was signed as a free agent from the Oakland Raiders, from the Las Vegas Raiders. And previous with that, he won a Super Bowl against the Patriots with the Eagles.
Hey, Nelson, wanted to ask you a little about what you feel that you're going to be able to bring to this offense, and also your feelings about how dynamic this group is with the established run, Cam at quarterback, and with the additions that have been made, and, of course, you know, that offensive line.
Well, the first thing I know I'll bring is a professionalism, you know, how I prepare and how hard I play. You know, I think those are things that I can easily control. And then from there on, I think Coach McDaniels has a plan. And it's for me to follow his plan and execute it out there.
And also in regards to, you know, the other additions, the group that you're coming in with, the two tight ends, Kendrick Bourne, what are your thoughts on the way the offense has the potential to look?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think, like I said, I think the organization definitely had a plan when they put everybody together. And we're going to work hard and figure it out.
Kendrick Bourne played for the 49ers last year and was in the big game the year prior to that. He is excited to be with the Pats.
Hey, Kendrick, hope all is well with you. Just to talk a little bit about what your skill set is as you see it and what you're bringing to New England, and also just the excitement to be not just joining this team, but this group of free agents and the way this team could potentially look next year.
Yeah, I think my skills fit the offense well, man. I can do different things, you know, wherever they want to put me is my main thing. You know, I'm just here to do what I'm wanting. Asked to do. So if I got to run the same route 50 times, you know, I'm going to run the same route 50 times, 50 different ways. So I just feel like I can do anything. I can run any route. And man, I'm definitely excited. You know, this, they're going to turn it around in 1 year. I can honestly see it. The first day in the building, I could feel how natural our connection was between the players. First time meeting each other, it was just natural energy, positive energy. So I feel like it's going to be an awesome year, man. I can't wait.
Red Sox get set to open their season on Thursday at Fenway Park against the Orioles. And Alex Cora, of course, was suspended for all of last year, now back as the Red Sox manager, and has been very open in talking about what took place and how he felt this past season in being suspended, how his lesson was learned from the cheating scandal, which led to the Houston Astros winning the championship in 2017 prior to Cora's time in Boston. And I spoke with him about that.
Alex, you know, a lot of times when people go through difficult things in their lives, they try to kind of put it behind them and to, you know, do it, talk about it once, and then that's kind of be it. Like you've mentioned it a couple times, even without being prompted, you know, what took place. What's your mindset and kind of keeping it with you in some ways and kind of continuing to, you know, to be cognizant of what took place?
Well, I mean, if I don't talk about it, there's some books coming up that are going to talk about it. It's not going to get away. And I'm ready for it, you know, and this is part of the process. I'm not one that hides from making mistakes or admitting mistakes. And I've been doing that. And I've been saying all along, this is something that is going to follow me the rest of my career. But at the same time, you know, I got a job to do. And my job is to help this team to get back to where we belong. But as far as like the other stuff that is part of my, is my life, it, you know, something that really happened and I paid the price. Hey man, maybe this is the way for me to get it out of my system, you know, and maybe somebody that is watching, you know, uses as, you know, him to be better or her to be better. We all make mistakes, you know, my mistake, obviously, it was in another stage, you know, but it's still a mistake, just like other people make mistakes doing, you know, in their jobs somewhere else. But I'm, you know, I am who I am, and that's what I'm more proud of, that I haven't changed. Hopefully, you know, hopefully when people saw me winning in 18, didn't say, you know, this freaking guy, you know, like, what a punk, you know. I'm still the same guy, man. And from the highest of highs and lowest of lows, I'm still here, you know, and I just made a mistake. That's that's it. You know, how many times I'm going to say it, I'll keep saying it. People are going to keep asking me. And I know this season that's going to be part of the equation. But like I said, when I talked to Haim in Puerto Rico, I'm ready for it. If I wasn't ready to talk to you guys about this, I'd be home right now playing with the kids and being with the family. But I'm ready. It's part of it. It's something that it happened, and I have to live with it. But at the same time, I'm pretty good about separating things, you know. This is my story. It's not their story. And their story is about to be written starting April 1st.
Is it difficult still, or do you like the aspect of I want to go and control the narrative, so to speak?
I'm not controlling the narrative. You know, I don't think that's you know, if you portray that, if that's the way you see it, you know, with all due respect, you're wrong. This is the truth. It's not a narrative. And this is the truth. So there's a difference between narratives and the truth. And I've been open-minded from the first day the process started. You know, when everything came out, you know, I have the story. So, you know, I've been honest with everybody.
I meant the narrative in regards to how other people are going to talk about it, as opposed to
I can't control that one. Right. Yeah, I can't control that one. And, you know, throughout the process, it's been eye-opening, right? You know, learn from a lot of people, you know, just watching from afar, reading from my couch, listening on TV or radio. I learn a lot. And some of them are right. Some of them are wrong. Some of them are way off. But at the same time, I know what happened. I know I made a mistake. I have to live with it.
That is Red Sox manager Alex Cora. Bobby Dalbec's been tearing it up at spring training. He has the most home runs in the big leagues. We'll hear from him coming up in just a little bit. We'll do some more Bruins as well. This is the Press Pass. Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Thursday night was a big night in Boston sports. It was the first time in over a year that fans were in attendance for a game. I mean, that is something that is pretty remarkable. We went a year without fans being in attendance for sporting events in Boston. But it signals that we're hopefully turning the page in regards to COVID-19, and protocols are changing. Some of the things that we weren't able to do before, getting able to do again. And I talked with David Pastrnak about that and kind of as a season as a whole. The Bruins had their season paused on Friday as a result of some COVID-19 positive tests. Jake DeBrusk as well as Sean Corrali are still in protocol. David Pastrnak, along with David Krejci and Craig Smith, were also in COVID protocol for a period of time, but they had enough negative tests to get out of that. So Pastrnak back is the second time he's had to go into protocol. His season got delayed a little bit as well because of injury. He's back now. He's still highly productive. He's the most goals for the Bruins with 14. Here is David Pastrnak.
Hey, Pasta, can you just kind of describe what this year has been like for you? Your productivity has been solid, obviously, but there's been a couple interruptions, getting started a little bit late. How has this been as compared to maybe what you expected?
It's been different, you know, especially when I came back. Obviously, our schedule then was a little bit easier. You know, we played Sunday, then we didn't play till Thursday, then, you know, so it was a little slower schedule back then. And sometimes it's good, sometimes bad, right? When you need to get some work at practice, but at the same time, sometimes you feel really good about your game, and then you have to wait 5 other days to play another game. So really exciting about the schedule coming up now. I feel good on the ice, and how I said, it's been definitely a challenging year, I think, for everybody, you know, and it's been different. How I said that we are at half point now, so it's great to get some fans in and you know, a little another little boost for us as a players, or at least for me, you know, you get the fans in the building. So it's gonna be fun, and like I said, it's a little challenging, but you know, nothing. We've been around this for a while now, so nothing new.
Also checked in with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy about if any of the players were symptomatic.
Have there been any players that have been symptomatic that you can report?
I'm not aware of any players that have been symptomatic. We are trending well. As I said, we have one more testing round to go through tomorrow morning. Assuming that those come back negative, everybody that has a negative will be able to get back into the facility. We will practice. And then we'll get ready to play the Islanders on Thursday. We'll make whatever lineup adjustments, depending on if there is a positive test and the guy has to, you know, stay on the protocol list or go onto the protocol list. No, Corrales out. And then the injured guys will get a better idea. As I said, I think there's a couple that are close. Frederick, Senishin, Mosey and Carlo have been skating. Not sure they'd be ready to play. And then Rask, you know, who's feeling much better, but needs some practice reps. So that's what we're looking at. And again, tomorrow after practice, I'd be able to obviously give you some definitive answers on those players. And I guess I'd put Tenorti in that group as well.
Yeah, just in conclusion, has this season in dealing with the COVID stuff been what you expected? Did you expect there to be, you know, these circumstances where you may have to shut down for a little bit? Was that part of what you anticipated?
I don't know if I have a good answer to that question. I didn't know what to expect. There was people at the start of the year said, well, the way it's set up, you know, if teams aren't careful, you might not get through the year, like how baseball started, and they eventually got it in order. I guess I use baseball as an example. I expected some level of postponements. That's what we've had. I don't know if it's equivalent exactly to baseball. I don't have the numbers for that, but there were some teams that got into more trouble than others. We saw that with Dallas right out of the gate. So I guess once it started, that was kind of my anticipation. And you always hope that your group stays out of the mix. I think we lost some games early through no fault of our own. There was no break. I think it was Buffalo or Jersey, whoever it was. So we got shifted around. Then you play the hand you're dealt from there. So you said once we got started, figured, well, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to play it. It's moving along well. A few stops and starts along the way. And again, you hope that for our sake and the rest of the league, obviously, there's no more. But you saw it last night in Montreal, right? There'd been nothing in Canada now, so they're in the mix. So again, you're hoping everyone gets to their 56 games at some point here, and you know, you get to an opportunity to play for the cup. So that's the way I'm looking at it. And I want our team to be as, you know, prepared as possible and ready to compete for that cup. We've got to get in first and get back on the ice. So, you know, that I guess that's where my focus is at.
Boston Red Sox open up on Thursday against the Baltimore Orioles. Bobby Dalbec has been their most significant hitter in the course of spring training, but he's going to hit ninth this year. And that signifies how good this lineup has the potential to be. I talked with Bobby Dalbec about that.
Hey, Bobby. First off, sweet T-shirt. Second, what have been the biggest changes in your approach, say, from last year to spring training this year?
I wouldn't necessarily say approach. I would say more, you know, what I worked on. Season, you know, physically and moves wise, I have way more control of my body, I would say. And, you know, it's a lot easier to maintain my swing and it won't break down and, you know, long lines of those things. Approach wise, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to stay in right center field. And, you know, that allows me to, you know, put the ball in play more, I think, without having to, you know, sell out for contact necessarily. That just allows it to happen on its own instead of kind of going back and forth. Well, he might throw this pitch here, so I got to only be ready. You know, so I'm just trying to, you know, put the ball, you know, be slow and early, keep my breathing under control, make sure I'm focusing on, you know, seeing the ball early. And then my overall intent on, you know, in that at bat, I think is the biggest thing.
It would also appear there's a strong likelihood that you're going to hit ninth this year. What does it say about the lineup that that is a strong potential?
I mean, I think the lineup speaks for itself. It's pretty dangerous lineup, especially when everyone's firing on all cylinders. You know, I'll hit, you know, wherever they want to put me. You know, I hit ninth is cool. You know, I get to flip the lineup and potentially, and you know, just keep doing that. You know, hand it off to the next guy. You know, that'll be my thing if that's where I am.
Patriots have been incredibly active in free agency. They brought in a number of players, including Hunter Henry, a tight end who has the ability to make big plays. He blocks well in the run, and somebody Bill Belichick's been following for a while, and I think is going to be a big impact player for the Pats. Hey, I want to echo what everybody else said and welcome you to New England. Two things. First, you know, is there anybody that you modeled your game after as a tight end, A, and B, just the thoughts of being a part of this offense, particularly with Cam at quarterback?
Yeah, to your first question, I think a guy that I watched a lot was Jason Witten. Growing up, was a guy that I really enjoyed watching, a guy that could do a little bit of everything, obviously. Great in the passing game, but it was very physical run game, took it on, had a lot of pride in it. And another guy I grew up watching was Tony Gonzalez, and a guy that, you know, obviously was a freak and just a basketball player, turned into football player, was so dominant. And then, you know, I feel like he really put his hat in there in the run game, had a lot of pride, obviously, you know, Hall of Famer, you know, two guys that I enjoyed watching. Much and try to model my game. As far as second question, and just very excited, obviously we're gonna have to get to work, practice, get flowing with things, and you know, start a little bit of chemistry, camaraderie, and start to build that.
I think Jalen Mills is gonna have a big impact in the secondary as well. Kyle Van Noy might have some bridges to mend after some of the things he had to say about the Patriots in the past offseason, both during the past season, both on and off the field when he was with the Miami Dolphins. And he talked with Tom Curran about that, and then I jumped in.
Are you going to have to put your arm around some guys and straighten things out here and there, or is that just what transpired?
Of course. You know, I want to talk to Cam. I mean, I feel like me and Cam have similar mindset, and that's to win. And I'm excited to work with him. I've heard nothing but good things. I think everybody's going to be excited after. Hopefully, we have dinner, and I'll pay for it, and just get to know each other better. And you know, I think it's a good rivalry. Everybody knows everybody. People have played on both sides, so. It's gonna be good.
The Patriots, just one quick follow. And the Patriots, you know, they go 7-9 last year, and you were part of making them have that season with the loss the second time around. But any delight that you took in them losing, and all the people who've been peeing on the Patriots' grave for the last few months, now the band is back together. It's you, it's Hightower, it's Karras, it's the McCourties are back there, and you got all these additions on offense. Do you have an opportunity now to give everybody a big can of shut the F up about Bill Belichick and the Patriots?
Yeah, I think that would be nice. But I think I'm not too worried about that, because I think everybody, we all have different chips on our shoulder. You know, something that I have a lot of goals individually and as a team. And I think, you know, it's 0-0, and everybody can say whatever they want, but those – sorry, little man's going crazy. He's ready to get in the media business too. but, no, I think, honestly, everybody's going to be ready to go. I think it starts from the head man, and I think he knows what he wants, and he knows how to get the pieces he wants and puts it together. I think – as players, we just got to come together as quickly as possible and have one goal in mind. And I think everybody's got that right now. I can just tell you from speaking you know, to some of the players, how hungry and excited they are. And I'm really excited. I got a big chip on my shoulder too.
Awesome. Thank you, buddy.
Sorry, that was long-winded.
Love it. That's just consumes.
Yeah. Just hopefully you splice it up good.
Next question is Chris Ryan, followed by Evan Lazar.
Hey, Kyle, welcome back. What does it say about everybody involved that there was that chirping, you know, last year, and that everybody is kind of putting that past one another, and that this relationship can resume, whether it's you, whether it's, you know, Cam, whether it's Bill, that, you know, the circumstance ends up being bigger than what took place last year?
I mean, it's part of football. I think everybody blows it out of proportion when there's trash talking in football. It's part of the game. It's part of the game. Some players are better than others. Some have terrible jokes. Some have good ones. Some can get under skin. Some can't. It's part of the game. And I think, you know, it's part of the game. I don't think anyone takes it personal. If they do, then, you know, that's their deal.
I want to ask you, too, about how good you feel like this team can be. Do you get a sense of that given the offseason moves, or do you need to see more to be on the field together in order to get a feel for how good you guys can be?
You want the Kyle GM to come out, huh? I'm not going to go into, like, how good we can be. It's so early. It's March. You know what I mean? It's so early to say there's so many more prime moves that are going to be made. You still got the draft. I mean, it's so hard to say, but I know one of our goals defensively, like it always is, to be top five. And, you know, that's always the goal, and we have the pieces, so why not?
Thanks.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us. Coming up next, we're going to look a little bit closer at the Celtics and head up to Franconia Notch State Park. Boston Celtics have had a difficult season. That is not something that is going to shock folks in regards to a statement. They are 22-23 on the year as they play here tonight, Saturday night, in Oklahoma City against the Thunder. And they have struggled. They have been inconsistent, particularly on the defensive side, where they have lacked the connectivity, on both floors, where it's a group that likes each other, but for whatever reason has not played well together. But this past week, they have had two significant wins, and I think that the tide may be turning. Sunday against the Magic. Love the way they played in that game, connected on both ends of the floor. We're going to talk about that in a second. And also, both games against the Bucks, where they fell behind but battled back and ended up missing a three. Tice missed a three at the buzzer, would have won the game. And then they handled the Bucks pretty handily in the game on Friday night. So the Celtics, to me, are kind of turning the corner here, and it started with that game against the Magic and the guy in Evan Fournier, who is now a teammate. I talked with Brad about that post-game Sunday. Hey, Brad, I want to ask you about the fourth quarter and, you know, what you saw there, particularly as the lead shrunk and the way that you guys responded in that, where you talked before about guys getting down on themselves in those circumstances and the fact that you didn't have an, oh, here we go again type of a mentality, yeah. It appears.
Good teams with good players, good coaches, there's runs, they make comebacks, and that's why you just have to move on to the next play. You have to have the teamness to do that. You have to have the individual resolve to do that. And, you know, this team has been in a funk in some ways with that stuff. But that's not who they are. I mean, we've watched these guys play. A lot of these guys play for a long time. We've seen what they do when their backs are against the wall. We know that they compete. There's never been a question of that. And I think so. You just have to do that as a team when things aren't going well. When you're kind of in that funk, you stop thinking about yourself and start leaning on each other.
Also talked with Jaylen Brown. Hey, Jaylen, Brad talked about playing invested in one another. Did you see that
today, and what does that mean to you? Like, when you're seeing it and feeling it, the teams invested in one another, what does that look like to you on the court on both ends?
It looked like today. Just overall better energy, everybody. You know, more connected on both ends of the ball, whether shots went in or shots didn't go in. So, like, people were still cheering guys on. And that's what it's about. So we look more like a team today. And when we don't beat ourselves, you know, we can be really good. So we just got to come out and just try to maintain it. I don't need to overdress it or you know, get too excited about it, to be honest. We got another game tomorrow. Let's see what tomorrow looks like.
Here is Marcus Smart. Hey, just your thoughts on the way the team responded in this game, and the way you guys seem to be invested in one another. That was a big theme going into this one. What did you learn about the team after this game?
Definitely. We responded the way we should have, and, you know, was expected. You know, especially with the rough stretches we've been going through, it was great to see us respond that way. You know, we're definitely invested. You know, we all had a talk about, you know, just fixing this season. You know what I'm saying? If we're going to go out, we got to go out the way that we know how to go out, and that's playing together and play the basketball. You know, we're all we got. So, you know, everybody's buying in. Everybody's trying their best to do everything they can right for the team.
Well, prior to talking to those guys, a little skiing on Sunday up at Cannon Mountain, where the conditions were phenomenal. Obviously, things have kept deteriorating in terms of the amount of snow and access to the glades, things of that nature. Mountains across New Hampshire with the high temperatures as well as some rain conditions. But it looks like things are going to shore up a little bit over the next couple of weeks, and they're going to be able to keep the snow that they have. So skiing and ski season will go into early to mid-April, I would say, at most ski areas across the Granite State. But for Franconia State Park, it's obviously more than just Cannon Mountain. You have all the hiking. You have all of the beautiful natural wonders like Foom Gorge. And I talked with JD, who is the general manager up at Franconia Notch State Park.
3, 2, and 1. This is New Hampshire Today. I am Chris Ryan in Franconia Notch State Park, wrapping up the ski season with some beautiful spring skiing at Cannon and looking ahead to what's been taking place here this spring in what is a national landmark and New Hampshire's real treasure, the Franconia Notch State Park. And we're here with JD, who is the general manager of Franconia Notch State Park. And we'll start with the skiing at Cannon. As things start to wind down a little bit, but this is really the best time of the year to be skiing. You're out here, you don't have to bundle up, you can enjoy the conditions, and we're still seeing some really great skiing out here. What's the season been like for you guys as a whole, given the COVID environment?
Well, I got to tell you, it's been phenomenally good, all things considered. You know, all of our 10-year averages and all of our seasonal averages are coming right down to fruition with what we're doing this year for numbers. You know, full price ticketing has certainly paved the way from a revenue perspective, and people have been generally very happy with the fact that we're selling fewer tickets at a bit higher price in order to realize revenue. But at the same time, on most weekend days where we might do 4,500 people, this year we've been seeing around 3,000 to 3,300. Everybody's comfortable, everybody has plenty of room, they're all masking up, and it's really been a great season for that.
Do you think that that's going to mean changes in the marketplace moving forward, where this model may continue to some extent, where, you know, if a person comes here and they spend a lot of money, they don't want to be waiting in lines the entire day, but you also want to balance that with bringing in new skiers and keeping prices down and providing opportunity for them. So how do you see this potentially changing the ski market moving forward and how you price?
Yeah, I know that season passes have become even more popular, not only here but everywhere. The full price model certainly works to get the bills paid and whatnot. We've thrown back in the New Hampshire resident deal days on Wednesdays. Next year and beyond, I see that probably coming back into play. You know, we'll see what happens from a ticketing perspective. I can tell you that we've really enjoyed the online ticketing model, and that certainly won't go away anytime soon. I think what everyone has learned during COVID is don't even leave your driveway without checking your watch or checking your phone to see, does that establishment I'm going to have any restrictions? Do they have any ticketing notifications or advanced protocols or whatnot? From a sheer business perspective, we'll see. You know, we're going to have a lot of meetings in April and May and June and kind of figure out what will stick and what stuff we need to maybe go back to the table a little bit on.
What What are you thinking in terms of how long the season goes? Obviously, Mother Nature has a big say in that. And it looks like the types of conditions here on Sunday are going to be continuing for a period of time, and that means, you know, the saddle and also some of the natural ski area, ski trails like Vista Way, my personal favorite in the state of New Hampshire, maybe an endangered species at this point in time. But what do you think in terms of the overall operating and how long we'll be able to do that?
Yeah, this has been incredible. This is my 14th year at Cannon and Franconia Notch. It's the first time that I can remember where spring has literally struck right on time in this third week of March. It's incredible. This week is actually going to get warmer each day. You know, today is Sunday. We're in the 40s. Tomorrow, Monday, in the 50s, into the 60s by Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. As far as an operating perspective, we're looking at April 11th right now, and we may reopen for that following weekend, the 17th, 18th. People will just have to stay tuned. It will depend a lot upon not only conditions, but does the marketplace still call for it? Do we still have people really wanting to get out here and ski and ride? You know, typically, third, fourth week in April, you've got kids starting to play lacrosse, softball, baseball, golf, soccer. So I don't know. You know, it'll be probably another week or two at least before we make that call on whether we go beyond April 11th.
This is also amongst my favorite times of the year to hike. Obviously, there's some mud challenges, and that's a given. But when you think about particularly the Flume Gorge area, where you can get the views that you don't get during the summer because there is not leaves on the trees. You can snowshoe still, I think, at this point in time, but as you mentioned, things are going to be a little bit challenging perhaps next weekend with the snowshoeing perspective, given the fact the temperature is going to be so high. What are the main things that folks should be thinking about in regards to Franconia Notch State Park this time of year, these next couple of weeks in terms of hiking, snowshoeing? What are some good things for them to be thinking about?
Yeah, from a hiking perspective, this can be a dangerous time of year for folks because they're not thinking about realistic footwear, you know. Mm-hmm. So you definitely want micro spikes at this time of the year. Remember, you're going from temps in the 50s each day, 30s, sometimes 20s at night. So you're going to get these flash freeze-ups and whatnot. You really have to be careful with your footwear. Bring extra spikes, bring a pair of snowshoes just in case. It's worth carrying it with you. The conditions can still change in the woods, and shade is different than sunlight, as we've seen. Don't go out on any open water surface at this point. I would not be trusting the ice now that we're warm for at least a week straight. But hiking everywhere right now. The hiking stuff is starting to open up. It can be a magical time of year. You just really need to use your head and kind of hike safe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You have to be aware of what's taking place. It's a challenging time period in terms of, as you mentioned, the weather changing and so forth. And what about the tram for this summer? It's a big attraction, and I'm sure you're thinking about a lot of different options with the upcoming summer. Have those conversations started to begin about what is going to be taking place, whether it's Echo Lake and capacity there, whether the tram is going to be back open for the summer?
Yeah, so, you know, we'll start at the northern end. Echo Lake Beach will be open. We'll probably boost that capacity this year. That was fairly tight last year at 250 people. We may boost that to 350 or 400. A lot depends upon what the CDC is recommending for proper spacing. The aerial tramway, we do hope to be operating Memorial Weekend, but a lot remains to be seen in our discussions with Health and Human Services and CDC regarding spacing. That will certainly absolutely be a reduced capacity operation. And you will have to book online. You will have to book in advance. There's no other way of getting around it. I don't see bus tours happening. I don't see big groups happening. I don't see a lot of discounting happening. You know, we lost about $2.5 million last year overall between March and November. So we do have some ground to make up. If I head down south to Lafayette Campground, last year we ran at 93% occupancy because things are so well spaced there naturally in between the sites and whatnot. And the Flume Gorge, that'll again be a reduced capacity, and it will be reserve online and in advance. But I do see us probably being able to boost that as well. And the big question at the Flume Gorge remains to be seen: can we run with some sort of modified format from an information and a welcome center perspective? Mm. And we're having all those conversations every day right now as far as what does summer look like while still running the ski area.
JD, great to see you. Thanks for having us up here at Cannon Mountain and Franconia Notch State Park. Again, we are so fortunate to have this here in the great state of New Hampshire, and we encourage folks to head up here for the spring and summer months. I am Chris Ryan. This is New Hampshire Today.
This has been the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Thank you so much for joining us. We will have another edition of the Press Pass coming your way next week. A lot to talk about then. The Red Sox opening day and the Bruins and Celtics continuing with their regular season. Thanks for joining us for the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.